Hi. Thank you very much. Can you hear me? I think I can hear myself, so that's good. My slides were originally pink, but then Brendan started complaining about it. It had to do with black and white. I'm Martin Vihare. My job is ostensibly or nominally a user experience designer at Google. And it's funny because Phil actually put up this slide, what happened when we started searching for full frontal on Google. And you don't really get the results very quickly. It asks you to press enter to make sure you actually, you know, you want to search for full frontal. That's my day job. I do stuff like this. So it seems like something incredibly easy, but we actually spend a lot of time, or I spend a lot of time doing all sorts of iteration of this particular little UI for, you know, whenever you search for something, it might not be exactly very family friendly. But that's not what I'm going to be talking about today. I have this 20% project, as we call it, where I help with Google Doodles on our homepage. And there's this really great team of illustrators that, you know, spend a lot of time working on those doodles. They're American ones, global ones, all sorts of international ones you don't really see very often, probably. There's a lot of work. And I help them out. I'm not part of the team, per se, because I cannot draw to save my life. It's my little dirty secret as a designer. But I help them out in terms of, you know, technology, user experience, things like that. So that's not, however, how I want to start. How many people, I'm actually curious, I'm dating myself here, how many people know this thing? Oh, yeah. That's awesome. That's Atari VCS or 2600. Came out in 1977. The most simple and lame piece of video game hardware you will ever encounter. This thing was so simple, it didn't have video memory. You literally had to construct a pixel at the very precise moment before it was handed to the electron gun. And if you missed the time, there was no pixel, no video memory, nothing. So the games that it came out with were something like this. One box, the other box, little box in between. And all of the launch games in 1977 looked exactly like this, right? Fast forward to 1982. All sorts of crazy people at Activision, other companies, found a way to force this video game console to do crazy things that it was never meant to do ever. That's kind of a nice metaphor for me for the whole idea of the web. You know, go to Tim Berners-Lee in 1990, show him some of the things we demo today. There's like no way he would believe that's actually possible, right? And let me show you this. This is one of the Star Wars games. You see those bands on the left? This is literally a programmer's decision to say, I need a couple of extra CPU cycles, so I'm going to forego some of those pixels, right? I can do computation, or I can create a pixel. That's my choice. And now this sounds really primitive and really weird and really funny, but some of you are already thinking, how is it different than what we do today with JavaScript, right? Exactly, pushing this whole thing forward and doing crazy things that nobody thought were possible, right? And the book came out not so long ago called Racing the Beam. It was actually about all of the things, all of the crazy things the Atari 2600 programmers used to do to push, you know, the envelope. And I highly recommend it. It's a huge source of inspiration for me because this is not so far from literally what we do today, except using very different medium. So what are Google Doodles? There's this thing that started very, very long time ago, it seems, at least in, you know, Google time. Back when our logo looked like this, not a very great design, but, you know, kind of very googly, as we call it. And at some point, Larry and Sergey said, we're going to go to Burning Man. I know how many of you are familiar. It's like a Silicon Valley tradition. You go to desert for a couple of days, and you run around naked and do all sorts of crazy things. And they thought, we should tell people, because nobody's going to look after the servers, and if they melt down, Google is going to stop working. So the first doodle was an out-of-office message, right? We're going to Burning Man. If this whole thing stops working, well, we're going to be back in a couple of days. needless to say, we don't really do that anymore. But since then, Google Doodles evolved into this whole tapestry of all sorts of different things that we try to do to just delight our users. Just to celebrate things we really care about as, you know, as geeks, as nerds, and all sorts of upbeat little things that we thought our users or the people who visit our homepage would find interesting or funny or inspirational in some way. So there's some of the examples over the years. And in the most recent years, we started doing things like that, right? Which is, I don't know if I, well, you all probably, hopefully know, I don't know if you can hear it, but we had Pac-Man, right, in last year that I wrote, and we had Les Paul earlier this year. That was pretty popular. People found it really interesting, just celebrating the guitar. And we started working on things like this. This is kind of where I step in, right? Where I can help, where I can contribute. All of these illustrations are done by illustrators, but I can do all of the code that's behind it, or some of the code, at least with Les Paul, I was just helping a little bit. And now you're thinking, okay, this is a Google homepage, right? This is a pretty valuable piece of web real estate for us, right? It must be really, really hard to do anything with it, right? Because there's tons of people visiting it every day, and you know, we shouldn't really be allowed to experiment. And in some way, that's true. And it's one of those things where we try to have our cake and eat it too, and there's gonna be a number of other things I'm gonna talk about. There's a lot of oversight, a lot of rules that you have to follow to change Google homepage. Like, literally, you know, if you move something by a couple of pixels, there's a number of people that have to see it and okay it. But there's also an unbelievable amount of freedom we get, and I'm really very delighted and very thankful that we can do it, and I'm going to show you some of the examples in a minute. Here are some of the things that we have to think about whenever we do some interactive doodle on our homepage, right? That's obviously people come there to search, right, mostly. Like, we can't interfere with people wanting to search on Google, because that's our core business. We also get all sorts of different types of visitors, right? People who maybe have never dragged anything with their mouse or never played a video game, that maybe are new to the whole idea of computing, down to maybe people like us who are angry with their no keyboard shortcuts, on completely the other side of spectrum, right? There's obviously, we care a lot about speed and latency and file sizes. All of the sort of tricks that some of you know and some of you probably invented to make sure, you know, the files are as small as possible, we have to employ, because we really care, we really believe that speed is very essential. Browser compatibility, of course, comes with all sorts of visitors in all sorts of countries, and, you know, obviously code reliability and quality. But all of these have exceptions, right? So let me tell you about a couple of stories with different doodles that I helped with that illustrate some of those points that I was just talking about. So I don't know how many of you know this thing. I think it was February. It was Jules Verne, and we kind of wanted to make it kind of like this submarine, right? Nautilus, I think it was called, and you could kind of move around and explore. And we thought it would be kind of a nice idea to do that, right? But it started very, very differently. This is the sketch from the illustrator where she just thought, you know, it's going to be a picture of something, and, you know, it's not going to be interactive, it's just going to be cool looking. But then, you know, we always have these brainstormings, and we thought, this is actually a good idea to do something interactive, because exploration in its nature, it's very interactive, right? So this is the first prototype that we did. And what I can do here, I can click on it and, you know, like go down, it doesn't go left and right yet. And it's one of those things where nobody discovered it's interactive at all, right? It doesn't look like something you can play with. So strike one, let's try something else. So we started thinking about what are the kind of UIs that we can try. And we always try to think of this not as a, you know, piece of interface that belongs to Google, but its own little universe that has its own rules. So we thought, oh, we're gonna have this cool UI that actually looks like a ship controller. And, you know, I'm doing this thing here. But it's a kind of a weird metaphor, right? It goes kind of left and right, but you have to hold it. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, right? So we moved on and we thought, well, we're just gonna make it a joystick. People kind of get the joystick right. It's a common thing. And we started doing user testing. We actually did show it to a number of people. And what we found out was interesting. People didn't really think this was clickable or movable at all. Even though to me it looks like something you wanna play with, people would still find it kind of confusing. And the other thing was, inexplicably, and this is something you learn when you do user testing, you don't know why something happens, you just know it happens and you have to fix it. People started clicking on the dials. There was something about the dials, and you know, they move as you go down, but you know, why would you ever when I click on them, right? So, okay, let's fix that. So this is the one that actually shipped in the end. And you can see a couple of changes that we made. So we made this very prominent. It's a big lever that you kind of want to play with. You can kind of go up and down. And, you know, it's kind of fun. If you go all the way down, if you get a chance, play with it. It's like it's a little bit of an Easter egg. There's an Easter egg right here with a balloon. Here's the cheat thing with it. If you click on the levers, it just... click on the dials, the lever lights up, which is like the cheapest UI thing you can imagine. It's like I should be fired as a designer for doing stuff like this, because this is like, this is, you know, cheating. But again, you gotta do what you gotta do, and let's see if this works. Because we're also really interested in technology, so we in addition to some of the CSS transition and transform that we use here that you already probably noticed, we have this thing with the accelerometer, right, where you can tilt your notebook and kind of, you know, it goes up and down. It apparently just goes left and right here, but I have to believe me. And somebody actually summarized it later. It's like the biggest deployment of CSS3 transforms and transitions on the web. And this was February, so the accelerometer stuff was still pretty new. And we found all sorts of little bugs there. But it was really, really fun to add. And if you think the UI cheating in the other thing was kind of shameful, we're actually doing even worse things where now we just say, you know, like, hey, click on this thing. It's really like so obnoxious, right? Like, we're not even trying to hide the fact that we have no idea how to attract people's attention. We're just like, do this thing, right? So what we're trying to do with this, with all sorts of UI stuff, is, you know, we have to do things that people are familiar with. Right? The lever, the idea of dragging the lever or clicking on the lever, the idea, you know, that if somebody points at something, it's probably worth checking out what that something is. But we also kind of want to do new things, right? And it's my principle to always just explore one new thing and try to see if it works or not. So this whole presentation is a little bit of a spoiler for the next doodle that I'm working on, all this stylistic thing and whatnot. And my idea for this doodle was, what if our mouse pointer was actually in the universe, right? What if it didn't belong to the browser, but it belonged to the doodle? So it actually, you know, hides behind all of these elements. And if you do something that it doesn't approve, it's like pretty judgmental. It's like, hey, I actually want to press this button. Just help me out here, right? I don't know if we're actually going to ship this way, but it's kind of an interesting thing for us to try. And again, we're allowed to do that, which kind of blows my mind once in a while, just to play with basic stuff like mouse pointers on the homepage, right? So let me just fulfill the wish. Now, looking at the code that goes into all of these things. This is the first interactive doodle that we ever built. I didn't help with it. It was a guy called Chris Hong, who's an excellent engineer. And, you know, this is all that it does. It's been many, many years since it's run. This is the code for it. It was back when we actually had to do all of the minification and all of these things by hand. So I actually made a poster for this guy who did it. It's like... not very period specific, but whatever. And of course, we now do things a little bit differently. We have compilers, we have things like that. And that was one line, if you kind of, you know, it wasn't wrapped. Pac-Man was about 5,000 lines. The doodle that I'm working on right now is 13,000 lines. It seems like an awful lot for something that lives for 24 hours, right? And then goes away. But again, we love this kind of stuff. We want to explore this kind of stuff. And I actually love doing that. And some of this code is not of great quality. Let me just leave you with this for a second. I think it's a testament to Google's willingness to experiment and actually allow my JavaScript on my homepage sometimes. But again, we're all very pragmatic about those kind of things, right? There's tons of people checking my code, and I have to have proper JavaScript readability and stuff like that. But then I'm trusted to do things that are necessary for it to work, right? And I'll show you a couple of other examples, too. One of the other things that we do very consciously is at any given moment try to think of the solutions that work in really old browsers and solutions that are cutting edge. So this is again an example of Jules Verne doodle. At the very top is the thing, you know, in a modern browser where it uses all the CSS stuff and accelerometer and things like that. Right here is an IE6 version, which, you know, it's a little bit more choppy, doesn't have some of the things, the alpha channel is not quite there, but it works, right? And we still think, you know, people with IE6 would find it delightful. And at the bottom, you know, to, I think, Phil's point, if you don't have JavaScript, we still give you an image. That's pretty beautiful, we think. So we're trying to do that. And it fascinates me, the idea that many, many years from now on, there's going to be an archaeologist looking at somebody's source code, and they're going to find something from, like, that belongs to the year 2000 next to something that belongs to the year 2010. It's kind of a weird thought to me that we still do it this way, right? We still have to care about IE6 at the bottom and something that just came out of the assembly line or whatever you want to call it for WebKit. All of this lives next to each other, and it's a really weird combination. It almost sometimes feels like we're playing this game of bingo, where there's all sorts of nasty hacks that we all know, and, well, we don't love them really, but we all know them, right? It's like Zoom 1 is the solution to all of the problems that, you know, in IE6 is the first thing you do even if you don't know what exactly is going on, right? All sorts of like things that we have to do because they're not ready yet, or they're ready only in some of the browsers and we want to target more. But the funny thing is that all of this also exists in all of the new technologies, right? All of the things with HTML5, however broad you want to treat it, all of those things are also kind of buggy, and you also have to have all of these kind of tricks and all of this kind of knowledge of things that are not obvious, right? And that's the kind of things we deal with every day, and it's frustrating sometimes, but it's also kind of interesting, right? And this is this image I stole from somebody within Google who was really frustrated with JavaScript. But I think in order to embrace JavaScript, we kind of have to get used to the idea that things are gonna be kind of nasty, right? And there will be some talks even today where we already saw many people trying to fix JavaScript in a number of different ways. It's very exciting. Unfortunately, the job that we do or I do, I still have to get very close to the metal, right? There's no frameworks, everything's written from scratch, everything's optimized very heavily. So we might use them whenever JavaScript itself improves. But let me show you some of those things that I personally find the most interesting. The things that go in between, you know, the programming and the user interface. So this is a Yars Revenge, an Atari 2600 game, and a guy wanted to do an explosion like this thing in the middle, but he ran out of memory. There was literally bytes of memory available, right? So he thought, I'm just gonna dump the source code of my game, and it's gonna be the explosion. So this is literally the source code of game. This is amazing to me, right? These are the kind of things that make me happy about the things I have to do. And let me show you some of those things, right? So we had this doodle last year that we wanted to celebrate Rube Goldberg, right? But Rube Goldberg's birthday is 4th of July. It's a really hard choice to do. Choose between 4th of July and Rube Goldberg, so we thought we were gonna do both, right? So we had this overly patriotic doodle that just did this little Rube Goldberg machine to celebrate Independence Day, right? But you start thinking, okay, how are we gonna do this? It's a nice animation, the illustrator, animator put it together in Flash, how are we gonna run it? We can't really use YouTube because it's too much, you know, weight for the homepage. Animated GIF, that's gonna be, you know, we're not in control, it might look kind of crappy, we tried. The file is actually pretty big. Is it gonna be Flash? Well, that would be okay. We're not really averse to Flash in any way. We use it when we need it, like sounds in Pac-Man, for example, but it's, you know, some of the browsers won't support it and we're not fine with it. So I had this idea to do something that eventually I called the Crashinator, which is a Futurama reference, I suppose. Imagine taking differences between each individual frame and then putting them in one big sprite, right? So you kind of see how it works a little bit right here, where, you know, between every frame we see what's the smallest rectangle that covers the difference, and then creates this big sprite out of all of these little differences. So after a while, it's going to speed up. I think you kind of get the idea, right? It builds this big sprite that just kind of we use later. Let me just show you. Now, if we play the animation with the little helper, you will kind of see what it does. It actually overlays a div every time there's a new frame to just, you know, put together an animation. And kind of let me show you this way, because it's actually a better visualization of what it does, right? It literally just puts a new div. Yeah. puts a new div in front of the animation, and if you don't know what it does, it just looks like an animation, and it works. And it works great on all sorts of other browsers, and it has exactly the properties we wanted. But we had to come up with this idea, right? And it was pretty nice to be able to do that. And I think there's something that I learned about JavaScript, and probably many of you already know, everything's possible in JavaScript these days. You just have to dig a little bit sometimes deeper. You have to be creative. You have to do all sorts of things that feel nasty, but they're going to work if you really want to. So all of these things also happen to be JavaScript. This very little thing, like all of this, the crashinator, all of these things, the spriting mechanisms that we have, they run using Canvas, right? There's no server-side component anymore. It's all of these things can be ported towards JavaScript. And that's really, really exciting to me personally. And to give you an example right here is, like the way I control this presentation, I have, I'm sorry, I used the new logo for Node.js. I don't know if it's allowed. Somebody was, I actually like the old logo better too. But I have, you know, I have a regular website on my iPhone, right? There's nothing proprietary about it. There's a Node.js server on my computer right here. It's a wireless network just for me alone. And there's a presentation on my laptop running Safari right here. And they all talk through WebSockets. And it's pretty amazing because they can, you know, I can have an extra button right here if I need it. I can have a slider. I can have all sorts of things. And it's all open web, right? There's nothing proprietary about any of those things. As a matter of fact, what I'm doing right here is I showed you the Jules Verne doodle and how you can tilt it to move it around, right? It works in Chrome. It works in Firefox. It works in all sorts of iOS devices because they have accelerometers. It doesn't work in Safari. Safari, for some reason, is compiled without support for accelerometer. What I had to do is I actually have a Chrome running in the background on my computer feeding accelerometer data to Safari, which is like some kind of a browser symbiosis. I like this idea of browsers helping one another to create something better than individual ones, right? So you know, this is Chrome in the background saying, hey, I have this thing that you should know about, right? I don't know. It's not. I don't know if that's useful. It's really exciting to me personally to see like this kind of things being possible these days. And you know, hopefully at one point we will put all sorts of things like that on our homepage as well, just to get people excited. So let me show you one other example. We had this doodle to celebrate the anniversary of World's Fair, and we wanted this very simple idea to have a loop or a lens to see a little bit more details what's going on, right? You can actually see there's some animations here. We wanted people to get excited about it and to try to find all of the animations. There's a number of them right here. There's like a fountain and the train is, there's a steam going here. But how can we do this kind of thing, right? So the obvious thing, if you think about it, oh, WebKit has this thing called WebKit mask, right? I can dump any image, any gradient, or whatever, to mask another element, which is an incredibly powerful thing, except it only works in WebKit, right? So this would not cover enough of the browsers for us. So let's think of something else. Well, there's border radius, right? You can put some sort of an image, and you can do border radius. It's going to be clipped to border radius, except if you have an animation. And we literally use just animated GIFs for this because we always use the technology that we think works best. We're very agnostic when it comes to whatever we use. That's not going to be clipped by border radius, right? So the animation would stick out if we did something like this. So that doesn't work. So here's what we did instead. And it works all the way, again, down to whatever browser you can use, IE6, stuff like that. Let's get rid of the loop. And you can see it's actually three different rectangles. There's three different divs here that look like they're one, that has roughly a circular shape. There's all this big image in the background that we just use, you know, overflow hidden to hide. But there are three of them, right? And they just seamlessly merge into one. And all of these things that you see, the rectangles, are just animated GIFs. And if I do something like this, these are two different divs, two different animated GIFs running together that look like one. Right? It's a huge trick, essentially. That's a lot of the things that we do are tricks. But, you know, if we put it back and I just ask the illustrator, okay, can I have like a really thick frame so I could just cover, you know, so I don't have to have 5 or 7 or 9 rectangles. I can just use 3. It's going to be faster. And it works, right? And it seems totally weird, and it seems really like nasty and like you should feel ashamed for doing it, and I always do a little bit, but it works. And it, again, it was something that people really liked and people found interesting. And again, there's this tension. We have a number of things, and this is tension between, you know, code that's great and the code that really is necessary just to get the job done, right? And I always believe these days, the unfortunate reality of JavaScript is that if you don't do anything in your project that feels nasty, if you don't do something that at some point you're like, ah, I wish this could be better, I wish, you know, I'm gonna return to it at some point and clean it up if it's possible. I always felt like if you don't ever feel like this, you're already kind of behind. This is kind of unfortunate about JavaScript, right? All of the cutting edge stuff, it's, you know, it's, we're like, IE6 is kind of nasty on the far end, but the new stuff is still also kind of nasty, and you always have to kind of cobble things together. It's like this old adventure game where you have five things in your pocket, and like two of them you can combine to create something amazing, but it's never, it's always very arbitrary, right? So the thing is that, and many speakers today touch upon that, and I was really happy to hear that, is that the code is not really our end goal, right? All of this hackery, all of these tricks that we do, some of them feel nasty, some of them I'm really proud of or really proud of, some of them, you know, we try to communicate to other people who might use them for other things. This is not the end goal, right? Our idea is really just want to create a little universe on our homepage that lives for 24 hours that people will find interesting or, you know, exciting, or they're gonna pause and think about something. So many people will think of Google and other companies like Apple and Pixar, there's this tension or this contrast between art and technology, right? And it's true to some extent, right? We're very glad that in Google, Google has historically been a very engineer-driven company, and it's great that there are some pockets, more and more so within Google, that art and design actually finds a good outlet, and the homepage is one of them, right? We can get very creative about the artistic style and some of the things we do. We can get very creative about technology, but really what we want to do is throttle ourselves, right? We're not in the business of making tech demos. That's not what our homepage is for. Right? So we have to think about what are the artistic choices and what are the technological choices that we can use to you know, have something that makes sense for the users, right? That's something that serves a purpose. And those are the kind of things that we have to struggle a lot all the time, because we really get very excited about, you know, WebGL and Web Audio API and speech recognition, all sorts of things. But we just don't want to use them for the homepage. And people were like, you know, I don't care. We want all of this to have some sort of a meaning. And this is where the best things happen, I think, to us when we find it, and then when our users discover that we did that. So Pac-Man was a good example. The original Pac-Man, again, 1980, very simple game, was a deterministic game, which means every time, you know, the random number generator was fixed. So every time you play it exactly the same way, it would behave exactly the same way, which had an interesting property that you could start coming up with patterns, right? To try to beat the game by just, you know, repeating the moves that you practice over and over again. And people did that, and it worked, right? And we could have done, or I could have done, just like a lame copy of Pac-Man. It kind of feels like Pac-Man, and you get the idea, but it doesn't really feel like it. But I didn't want it to, right? Because that wouldn't be the proper application of technology. I also didn't want to do emulation, because that's cheating. We want to do it in JavaScript from, you know, line 1 to line 5,000 from scratch, because that's our medium and that's how we pay homage to Pac-Man, right? And I also knew it was deterministic, so I wanted to make ours deterministic. And there are people who are actually coming up with patterns to beat our Pac-Man, which was amazing. I was so delighted when I saw that, because like somebody got it. Maybe not very many people who realize Pac-Man is the same way as the original one, but some people got it and some people try to do that. Here's another example. The illustrator who put together all of the great illustrations for Jules Verne doodle, she used narwhals. I don't know how many people know what a narwhal is. I didn't before that. And people were like, what, you know, many people were looking at this, what's going on? Is it mythical? Is this like a unicorn that's underwater? It's an actual animal, right? And what happened was dictionary.com the next day chose it as the word of the day and explained to people, hey, what a narwhal is, and actually it's real. And I found it fascinating, because this is exactly what we wanted. Like, some people actually learned something from our goofy Jules Verne doodle, right? It was pretty great. The The Les Paul Dudo was amazing because it was the first one that we did that people could actually be creative, right? People could actually try to do something that didn't exist before. And within 4 hours, there was some agents in Brazil, I think, that put together this little website called My Dudo Songs, actually really well done, where people could write down the key combinations and for all sorts of different tunes that were popular. And this is, again, this thing lived for 24 hours and that was it. But it was inspirational enough for some other people to actually create something something like this. Right? And the last part is going back to technology. We used the Crashinator for Martha Graham Dudo earlier this year. It was this really lovely animation that we got from outside. And we used Crashinator to do that. Here we go, I can rewind it. But the idea was actually somebody looked and inspected the code and look at it and actually figure it out how it worked within the 24 hours when it was up and documented it, and some other people started using this technique even though we didn't disclose it. And again, this was pretty amazing, especially if you think about, you know, it started with Rube Goldberg, and we had this little contraption that was not unlike Rube Goldberg's contraption just to make it work, right? So it's kind of self-referential in a way. And again, we could, you know, some people found the dance in it really amazing and the animation great. And some people were kind of amazed by the way we put it together and they thought, that's kind of cool, let's actually share it with other people. And I think that's also very, very great, and I'm very humble whenever that kind of stuff happens. And this is really what makes me want to do all of those kind of things, right? So this is, I mentioned the accelerometer code that we had to put together. In February, it was so experimental that, you know, that we actually had to, all of these coefficients or whatever you want to call them, we had to do experimentally because it was not documented at all how it worked in iOS or Mozilla or Chrome. And we actually had this really funny moment where me and another engineer, we had exactly the same model of MacBook Pro running exactly the same code. We lifted it up and we turned it both left. It went left on my computer and it went right on the other computer. And we're like, okay, that's not really all that great. And what we found out in the process was that the Chrome people who put together the accelerometer code inside Chrome, they actually had to reverse engineer the chip inside MacBook. And it turns out that Apple just uses two different chips in different series of computers. We know, and like, who would ever know, right? And we actually filed, it was pretty great. Like, as a result of this doodle, we filed bugs against Chrome and other browsers to make sure they understand accelerometer, which is, again, it blows my mind because this is our homepage, right? This is like a really big deal for Google. And we're allowed to do things that are pretty cutting edge and nobody really complains. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work so great, but it's part of the price that we pay. And on the other hand, there are also moments like this where, you know, I sit, it's 1 a.m. and I'm trying to debug Pac-Man to figure out why doesn't it work so great in IE6, right? There's this flickering thing, the mouse pointer is doing this thing, and I'm like, yeah, this sounds familiar. I used to do this a number of years ago, and I kind of like tried to, oh, it's the background image cache thing, right? Some of you probably know this. You have to put this incantation in your website, and it works, and like it's just the thing for IE6 that you learn, and it's completely arbitrary. Except it didn't work for that reason. It's the first time it failed. So at 4 a.m. I came up with this solution in which I totally removed the background CSS from the page, and I used images that were clipped using overall hidden as a kind of poor man's background image hackery that worked, that happened to work, right? And again, we could have just as well given up on IE6 at like, you know, 2 or 3 a.m. or whatever, but we wanted to make it work, and, you know, with enough determination, we get it working. And then what's really amazing for me and makes me very happy and very thankful that I can do this kind of thing is this kind of feedback. When somebody played with Jules Verne Doodle and he heard about this thing, you can lift your laptop and move it around, it's like, no way, it doesn't work, it doesn't make sense. And it turns out it does make sense. It's an accelerometer that originally was there to, you know, save your hard drive or whatever. But think about it for a second. We had this moment where people learn about their hardware from JavaScript. Like, there's so many layers, so many abstraction layers above the hardware, right? That's pretty mind-blowing to me. And I think it gets me really excited that this kind of things could happen, right? Here's another piece of feedback that I got, which really made me happy because this wasn't the original code, right? We didn't emulate it. It was written from scratch, but this is the kind of doodle with the, we thought the being very, very faithful to the original code would be the thing that people would appreciate. And some of them did, maybe not very many, but somebody actually thought they're running the original Pac-Man, and that's the kind of thing we wanted to do from minute one. And probably my best piece of feedback that I loved personally was, you know, the why I ventured and tried to do the Pac-Man thing to begin with was, you know, many of you probably did the same thing. I used to grow up in arcades, right? I used to play all of these games. This was my childhood, right? And I thought, cool, we can do all sorts of crazy technology, put them on the homepage, all sorts of great illustrations with Pac-Man. But really what I want to do is for some people at least to play it and think, oh my God, this is like, I remember 30 years ago, I played it in this arcade somewhere, and you know, I have this great memory of doing this, right? And then I saw this as one of the tweets. And then I thought, you know, like arcades maybe don't exist anymore, at least not in the same form or same way of fashion that they used to. But for this one, or actually there was 2 days in May last year, we actually brought them back in like a new way and form. It was on our homepage, but you could feel the same way you felt 30 years ago playing games, and you see all sorts of other people playing games as well. And that felt actually quite amazing. And all of this is because, you know, all of this technology that we use, and we get very excited, I get very excited about all of these new things that happen in HTML5 world and all these tech demos that are happening. But the same way as, you know, Atari 2600, its sole purpose was to entertain people, right? All of this technological trickery that was employed to make all of these games happen was really just about making people happy, right? Making people have fun in front of their TV, which was a new thing back then. And it wasn't just technology for technology's sake. And that's the way I like to think about doodles and some of the other JavaScript examples that are popping up on the web, where they're really exciting and they also serve a purpose, right? It's all of this technology that's really you know, enhancing the user experience and all sorts of doing all sorts of things that are great. And as I was looking at this yesterday, I also came up with this scary thought. The same way today we look at Atari, or at least I look at Atari 2600, it's like, oh my God, this is so amazing. People used to have all sorts of you know, technological constraints that they had to overcome. We're probably gonna meet in like 10 years, or maybe full frontal 2020, and we'll probably be all like, oh yeah, i6, that was so cool. Like this is Zoom 1, remember Zoom 1? Oh my God, yes, that was so great, right? This is a bit of a scary thought, but helps me cope sometimes. Think, you know, like at some point I'm gonna look at this and laugh, and there's be all sorts of amazing things that are gonna happen in JavaScript HTML5, thanks to probably all of you and many, many people that are gonna do just mind-blowing things, and I'm very excited about it, and I can't wait to put them up on our homepage. So thank you so much. This doesn't seem like right counter, but all right, thank you. Yeah, we can do questions.
Take two or three questions.
My JavaScript skills are not so, this probably was more than 5,000 seconds, right?
Hi, thank you, that was incredible.
Thank you.
A lot of good tricks and stuff. What I really liked as well was you showing a few of the original demos of what your thought process was before you ended up at the final one. I know there's Google.com logos where you can see all of them, but would there be a chance that you start a blog where you write about some of the things and some of the choices that you made?
Funny you should mention that. If everything goes okay, there's actually going to be a blog starting today, which is completely coincidental. I didn't arrange it soon. But
yeah,
we are in the process of putting together a blog and a more kind of comprehensive page. And I've been pushing the team to share some of those techniques more broadly. So hopefully that we will see more of that, both the creative process on the art side and the technological side and the UX side shared more and more often. And you know, email me if you don't see that soon, and I will tell you when it happens. Any other questions? I have this one here.
How much time do you get to work on each one of these?
It's kind of ostensibly my 20% project. but I really don't ever clock in and out, so it's really hard to say. It's typically non-linear in that, you know, like I start, it's like, oh, this is kind of cool, and I'm just gonna spend a couple of hours on this. And by the end, it's like, you know, 24/7, right? Literally, like Pac-Man was the last, oops, it's my secret computer name, secret password. Oh, you can see this is little Chrome helping Safari. In the background, I thought I should. So I'm sorry. it actually does take up a lot of time, but I'm allowed to do that because, you know, it's for me. I think it's not just, you know, making cool stuff on the homepage, but it's also exploring the technology and you know, there's a lot of or some at least interesting techniques that we develop in the process that other products then start using and stuff like that. I don't really have a number, I'm sorry, because it doesn't really work like this for me at least. I just do things and sometimes I work more hours than before.
Anyone else?
One just
question. Why am I demoing in Safari? I think was the question.
Yeah, that's the question.
It's a really good question, especially considering I'm on the Chrome team.
I think I have an idea why.
Safari has a much higher refresh rate, you know. And as a designer, I mean, I have an iPhone, and you know, it's another thing that as a designer, it just works better for me. I think what's great about this, though, and I'm glad you asked, because it's. I'm very proud of Chrome. It's an amazing browser, and there's a lot of really great things that we do with it. But I'm really happy that there are other browsers because they teach us how to do other things better, and we teach. It's a nice, you know, it's a nice thing to have a number of browsers, and each one of them excels in something, and in a number of things probably. And it all gets us, you know, more excited in the morning on the Chrome team because we're like, oh, we have to do this better. We have some better ideas thanks to that. You know, good competition is great. And I'm also glad because I can just play around with a lot of them. And it's almost like, to me, learning different languages. It's like, I can't converse in many languages, but I know a little bit of a couple. And I like the idea how they make you look at the word a little bit differently, just by looking how they construct sentences, how kind of, you know, word endings they use, et cetera, stuff like that. I like different browsers because both the technology inside and the UI outside make me more open about, you know, how to approach making a good browser. And Safari specifically is just the compositing engine is still faster. And I am pushing a lot of people inside Chrome to make Chrome as good or better as Safari, and we are getting there.
Please
but,
do, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm also, it's my presentation, I cry if I want to, so, sorry.
Thanks very much. Cool, that's the last question, so thank you, Marcin.
Thank you so much.